Welcome back to Consider This. Melissa and Sharad here with you this evening. Now, last week, U.S. President Donald Trump presented his long-awaited Middle East peace plan to Israeli fanfare and Palestinian outrage. In this 181-page plan, he proposed an independent Palestinian state and the recognition of Israeli sovereignty over West Bank settlements. So to discuss this further, we have joining us on the line to help us understand why Trump's Middle East plan is so divisive. We have Guy Burton, adjunct professor at Versailles College in Brussels. Guy, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Now, Donald Trump has called this plan a win-win opportunity for both sides. But is it really? I mean, what do Palestinians stand to lose from this deal?
Yes. Well, thank you very much for having me on your show again, Melissa and Sharad. And to answer your question, I mean, it's very clear from the very beginning, even before the plan was announced, that it was the Israelis who were very enthusiastic about it, and the Palestinians had made clear that they were not happy about it. So in the plan itself, it really captures, the essence captures a demilitarized Palestinian state. Israel will be responsible for security. It will take control of the Jordan Valley. The settlements in the West Bank will be annexed to Israel, with some land swaps made for Palestinian towns in Israel. But it's very much weighted towards the Israelis, and it reflects really what a lot of the political right in Israel have been sort of pushing for over the last decade at least. So in that sense, it sort of vindicates a lot of the Israeli political establishment, what they've wanted to see. And of course, for the Palestinians, it's very difficult for them to sign up for that.
Guy, to what extent does this demonstrate a fact that I think we've long recognized that the U.S. is no longer an honest broker for any kind of plan in the Middle East? Is that something that, and this does this this plan actually nail that truth?
I mean, to be honest with you, I don't think it's ever been the case that the Americans have been an honest broker when it comes to the Arab-Israeli conflict. I mean, America has very much been supportive of Israel since the 1960s and the 67 war. Back then, you had a very sort of clear division within the Middle East between sort of the Americans and Israel on one side and Soviets and the Arab states on the other. With the end of the Cold War, there was this recognition that there was no other major player. And so the Americans were sort of by default, the only, actors or only mediators in town. However, the Palestinians signed up to that because they felt that at least with some degree of international pressure and influence, that there might be some sort of attempt to sort of wait or at least put pressure on Israel to accommodate Palestinian concerns. But that certainly hasn't been the case over the last 25 years, that the Oslo process, sort of the current arrangement, the current process, which requires or is based on the assumption that any final agreement would be settled between Israel and the Palestinians through negotiations and with the Americans overseeing it.
Well, Guy, for me, my question is about timing. I'm curious about the timing of all this. I mean, Donald Trump had been talking about this Middle East peace plan since the campaign trail back in 2016. So why do you think Trump announced this now?
I mean, some people have said that it very much sort of glues towards the political cycles in America and Israel. Certainly, Trump is undergoing an impeachment trial. Netanyahu, the prime minister in Israel, has his own political problems. He's currently sort of facing corruption charges. So there was a sense that maybe the announcement might help. Also for the Israelis as well, they have an election in a few weeks' time. And so certainly for Netanyahu, this would be sort of with a very sort of pro-Israel plan being put forward, this was seen as maybe a way of helping him, sort of shore up his base and to win support. Because for Israel as well, this is going to be the third election within a year. In the previous two in March and September last year had absolutely did not deliver any kind of clear government. And so really sort of the political right in Netanyahu are very keen to try and win the elections to be able to form a government. And if so, avoid a prosecution through parliamentary immunity. So there is that for the Israelis.
Right. Guy, the question of the power configuration in the Middle East as it stands, right? Is it possible for Israel to push ahead with this plan with the backing of the U.S., disregarding Arab opinion, disregarding the Russians, and just annex the West Bank and go ahead with this plan
unilaterally?
Yeah.
I mean, certainly. I mean, I think, as I just pointed out earlier, I mean, very much the plan itself captures a lot of what the political right has been calling for in Israel. But if you actually look at the wider political society, political policy, there really isn't that. There's quite a lot of consensus on sort of the position of the settlement. There is that sense the political left itself is very, very weak these days. And so an alternative is lacking. Now, really, when it comes down to annexation, and this is something that sort of seems to be implied within it, it's certainly seen by the Israelis that they can, basically annexation could happen unilaterally, at least by parts of the Israeli political elite. Some of them are very keen for that to happen, but Netanyahu initially sort of made signals that he was going to do that, but then he stepped back and said, actually, we do need to work with the Americans on this, because part of the arrangements of the plan is that an Israeli-American commission would be set up to look at which settlements and which land would sort of find itself within Israel. Mm. So there is a quite, so certainly the sense of annexation is very, very high. And the challenge, of course, is that there isn't really any kind of external pressure to discourage the Israelis from doing this or to reject the American peace plan, the American plan outright.
Why isn't there external international pressure against this plan? And where are you expecting? Where should we be looking for a reaction?
I mean, one of the things that I've been studying over the last few years, I'm very interested in the role of sort of other players, and especially sort of non-traditional actors like the Chinese and the Indians and others. And what is very interesting is to have seen that, you know, some of these countries took a very sort of strident, critical position in relation to Israel and a supportive position of the Palestinians in previous decades. What is interesting is that over the last 20 to 30 years, they have established relations with Israel, built up diplomatic relations, built up economic relations, and in a way de-linked their relationships with the Israelis and the Palestinians from the conflict. So often what you find is that international actors, you know, stress the importance of the peace process, but don't really do very much to support it in any substantive way. And I think, you know, that's very much the way that I think we're probably going to see things moving forward. Certainly, we've had reaction since the weekend, the Arab League, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, and most recently yesterday, the European Union, being much more critical of the plan. But it's not very clear that they've sort of put forward anything themselves. And in a way, they would probably expect the Palestinians themselves to put forward a proposal, an alternative.
Guy, I understand that the Palestinians were not consulted and they weren't part of the negotiations or the design of this plan. But when you consider that this is a deeply asymmetrical relationship in Israel and the Palestinians, is there something to recommend this plan to a much, much weaker opponent? I mean, the Palestinians, could they find something in this? After all, they are promised East Jerusalem as their capital. They are promised, after an interim period, maybe 4 years, that they might be the setting up of a state for them that might be contiguous and so on and so forth. Is there anything in this plan that might be good for a much weaker Palestine that has actually, in many ways, fewer options?
I would highly doubt that. And certainly Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president at the Arab League at the weekend, pretty much said that he would go down in history. He cannot go down in history accepting this. I mean, the nature of what is on offer is really a demilitarized Palestinian state. So that effectively means that the Palestinians have no control over, you know, their borders. They have no control over sort of, you know, wider security issues. That would be left to the Israelis. And it's very hard for any Palestinians to accept that. On top of that, there is a real problem because who else can represent the Palestinians? The PLO, which is Abbas is president of, suffers from a lack of, you know, sort of electoral legitimacy. He has not held an election for over a decade now, and there is a growing split within Palestinian society, within civil society. people who are actively questioning the whole idea of two states and campaigning for a one-state solution in which, you know, Palestinian rights, both in the West Bank and Gaza, as well as, you know, Palestinians living in Israel, that their rights should take precedence. But of course, you know, I think what we're seeing with this plan is, you know, in a way, sort of that one state idea coming into fruition. But the problem, of course, is it's not going to be one in which Palestinians and Israelis will be treated on an equal and level playing field. It will probably be, you know, an apartheid state in which the Israelis have more rights than the Palestinians.
Guy, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight and putting this deal into perspective for us. Now we're going to take a quick break and be back with more on Consider This, so don't go anywhere.